peeking in to see what's on the stove. Henry never says anything, but when he does, it matters. She's black. Now he disappears into his back room for more studies. God, he studies his eyeballs out of his sockets. If he doesn't get into Harvard, we're all going to be on suicide watch.
You're making all this fuss for a nigger?
Wait!
Well, doesn't it seem like a lot?
Wait, do not use that word in this house. I mean it.
What word?
You know what word.
You mean
Wade, I mean it. You know how I feel about that and around the kids. He laughs.
Jeez, where's your sense of humor?
He waddles into the kitchen, swings open the cupboard, grabs a bag of fiddle faddle, and heads into his master hovel. And don't spoil your appetite.
Yes, Massa.
He leaves, and now it's just Mom and the julienne carrots and me. I'm sorry you had to hear that. Mom, newsflash, he's an idiot. My mom sighs and shakes it off. Okay, now you have to put the butter before the orange juice. She takes out a skillet and puts it on the stove. In that moment, I decide a couple of things. One is, I'm never cooking for some guy that just grunts and says bad words. And two, the vampire is right. If I don't get straight A's, I'm gonna get stuck here. And if I get stuck here, I am gonna kill myself. 25. Pedaling fast, fast, fast. This is the moment. This is the moment I'm getting closer, and everything is still. Everything is still, and everything. The trees, the leaves, the sidewalk, everything is holding its breath, waiting. Pedaling fast, fast, fast. The trees are leaning in, trying to protect me, trying to grab me, trying to keep me from seeing. The leaves and the sidewalk whooshing by, whispering to each other, don't let her see, don't let her see, don't let her see. The stop signs practically begging me, stop, go back, go home, just go home. Pedaling fast, fast, fast. This is the last moment I get to be this person. This is the last moment before everything changes from pink to purple to black, and nothing is ever the same. Nothing is ever the same again. 26. The evening does not go well, but it's not what you think. The only person who is normal about anything is Tiffany. Everyone else is spazzing out, especially my mom, but she's spazzing out in a good way. Or a nice way, at least. She's kind of acting like the mom on Leave It to Beaver, June Cleaver. She's emphasizing everything in the weirdest way possible. Example, Wade, could you please pass the julienne carrots? Thank you so very much. Normally the sentence goes like this, you, carrots. Now my mom, God bless her heart, is acting this way, I don't know why, but I think she's overcompensating. Outside of her head, because inside of her head she knows how much no one else at the table is really happy about this after-school special of a dinner to which their dumb little sister has subjected them. Like my annoying older sisters, for instance. They are just huddled over to the side of the table like two bitchy bats, just waiting for some moment to swoop down and bite out everyone's entrails. My perfect brother, Robbie, is the second most normal person. He's eating his food and just waiting for everything to play out, with a content but slightly amused smile. This is not surprising, because it's sort of the way he deals with everything. One day the Grim Reaper will show up at his doorstep, and he'll shrug and say, "Yeah, okay, it's been a good run. Where to?" Henry is acting pretty weird, honestly. What else is new? Quiet? Check. Brooding? Check. Staring? Check. Now, if Robbie were acting this way, we'd call an ambulance, but this is Henry's natural state, so we're all clear. And what about the ogre, you ask? Well, his way of dealing with this excruciating dinner is to pile his plate as high as possible and stuff his face as fast as possible and not make any eye contact. If he looks up at all, he looks up at my mom, rolls his eyes, and quickly eats another bite of mashed potatoes. Poor Mom. Now, Tiffany, I want to know if they are treating you girls okay at the Bunza Hut. I try to ask Annika, but I can't seem to get a straight answer out of her. Mom, what do you think they're doing? It's the Bunza Hut. Tiffany obliges. Oh, it's not so bad. They let us drink the shakes.
Oh, they do they?
The leftover shakes.
Silence. Confusion.
I chime in to ease everyone's befuddlement. You have to make the shake in this silver cup thingy, and there's always some left over, so we get that.
Now, Henry. But then couldn't you just make the shake bigger?
Well, we do. Basically, we make the shake twice as big, so every time anyone orders a shake, we get a free shake. I'm so proud of myself.
So you're stealing.
That's the ogre.
Of course.
Tiffany kind of blushes. Stealing's not her racket.
It's mine.
Well, I just hope you're not abusing that privilege. Mom feels the need to turn this into some kind of life lesson. Oh, Mom, the guy's a total jerk face. And he's, like, super rich. Have you seen their house on Sheridan? Not to mention, he told Shelley she's fat.
Again, Henry. Their house on Sheridan is worth $1,276,000.
Silence. Now, Robbie.
But who's counting?
Mom, the guy totally sucks. You should see how he talks to Shelley. He just abuses her. It's horrible.
Now the ogre. Does she work there?
Now, Mom. Wade?
I said, does she work there?
God, I hate the ogre. Yes, she works there.
So, he's the boss. He can do whatever he wants.
Me. Nice. That's a nice philosophy. What if he wanted to chop her head off or eat her ankles or something? Could he do that, too? Wade shrugs. Everybody else looks at their plate. Now the doorbell rings. This is a surprise to everyone but Tiffany. Mom goes to the door and answers in her best Doris Day. Good evening. How may I help you? But the person on the other side of the door is not in the mood for Doris Day.
Tiffany, get out here right now.
Of course, now the whole table, our whole table of sibling rivalries, little snickers, and the ogre, turns to look. Tiffany's mom is not in a good mood. She also looks like maybe this is the first time she's got out of bed today. Just looking at her, my heart breaks for Tiffany. As meticulous and sweet and orderly as Tiffany is, now I see it's maybe a reaction to whatever her mom has going on at home.
Get out here right now. Come on, now.
Tiffany is red with shame. God, I wish I could take this from her, and all of us are instantly on Tiffany's side. I can feel it. The whole family who were so annoyed we had to have this stupid Leave It to Beaver dinner. Well, now we are ready to take Tiffany in as our own. Come live with us, Tiffany. What's one more? Even the ogre is less ogrified. His spine is up. He wants to help, but like all of us, he is helpless. Mom tries to make it better. Would you like to come in for dinner? There's plenty of...
Lady, I can take care of my own.
Mom nods. I can tell she's calculating. What can she do? Can she do anything?
You think I can't take care of my own?
No, I don't think that. I just thought maybe you might...
Well, you thought wrong, lady. Come on now, Tiffany. I ain't saying it again.
Tiffany ducks out of the dining room and down the stairs and to her mother. Her mother, who moves her, not gently, behind her. We all stare. Please, we would love to...
Good night.
And with that, Tiffany, in her white ankle socks and cute navy skirt, is gone. Back to that cruddy little stucco apartment complex with that just-out-of-bed mom. And the rest of us are just sitting there, struck dumb. There is a long silence. Mom comes to the table and starts collecting the plates. Lizzie and Nina look at me. Lizzie does the talking. Hey, Annika. That sucks. We didn't know.
Neither did I, really.
Beat. Now Nina.
Poor Tiffany.
Now Henry.
I thought she was beautiful.
Silence. Okay, if you were looking for the quietest, weirdest silence in the USA, you found it. Right here in this dining room, between the oak dining cupboard and the cedar breakfast nook.
Now Robbie just starts chuckling. Well, okay, there you have it.
Now Lizzie and Nina start making funny noises. Not a catcall exactly, more like, "Ew, Henry's in love." And now it's too much for the ogre.
Don't even think about it, Henry.
He's pointing his finger. Of course, this makes Lizzie and Nina lose it completely. They are giggling and teasing and snickering it up. Robbie's clearing his plate with a smile on his face, and Henry is turning the color of a lobster.
You guys are idiots.
Henry clears his plate, shaking his head.
I swear, if I don't get into Harvard, I'm going to jump off a bridge.
He walks back to his room, annoyed.
Yeah, I love bridge.
Brilliant comment, courtesy of Nina. The ogre rolls his eyes, gets up, and lumbers back to his room, where he will lie down on his waterbed and blast Wheel of Fortune, then The Tonight Show, then the late-night news. I say it. What in the world is a love bridge? Mom is just putting away the leftovers. She looks at me over the Tupperware. She doesn't have to say anything. She just gives me the universal look for, we tried. We tried what? To have dinner with a black person? To pretend we weren't just a household of generally crappy people? We tried to be less self-involved? We tried to look up from our dumb obsessions and notice other people? We tried to be open for once. We tried not to be just another vaguely racist family. We tried to be enlightened. We tried to be good. We tried to be all of the things we are not. 27. Today, at the Bunza Hut, I'm in charge of putting up the Halloween decorations. There's two skeletons, one for each door, and a bunch of pumpkins that I'm assuming will be doing double duty for Thanksgiving. Right now, they have faces on them. Shelley is behind the counter doing her lip liner. Monday nights are pretty slow, because pretty much everybody in Nebraska is addicted to football, thanks to the Cornhuskers. But that translates, of course, to the NFL, so tonight is, basically, a holiday. Sure, people call in big orders to take home and eat in their family rooms, rec rooms, and man caves while they watch the game with the guys, but pretty much, once the game starts, it might as well be the end of days. Tonight's the Bears versus Packers. Big matchup. Also, this is a game that shall cleave the heart of the city in twain, as basically Lincoln, Nebraska is chock full of both Packers fans and Bears fans. Yeah, Chicago is closer, but that's full of a bunch of city slickers, and half the people here are related to people from up north in Wisconsin. Why do you think everyone in this state is blonde? They might as well call it Scandinavia, too. Electric Boogaloo. Or maybe Germany, too. This time without Nazis. There are about five last names at my school. Kraus, Hess, Schnittgrund, Schroeder, and Berger. It is not unusual to have an uncle named Ingmar. If you care what I think, I'm a Packers fan. Sorry, everyone else in the world, but really, that is just me feeling sorry for you for not being a Packers fan. These skeletons are not easy to get up. First of all, they're too heavy for this scotch tape. And second of all, these freezing cold glass doors don't seem to want to have anything taped to them. Shelley is not helping.
I think you should dump that Logan guy.
Shelley always has a way with words.
How can I dump him? I'm not even going out with him. Seriously, what if Becky finds out?
Whatever.
Wait, how's she gonna find out?
I don't know.
Did you tell her?
What? No. Shelley, seriously, did you tell her?
No, I didn't.
Well, don't, even if she asks or anything.
I know.
Can you help me with these stupid skeletons? They won't stay up. Shelley sighs and comes over, pocketing her lip liner. So there we are, hanging these spooky but not too spooky skeletons on the ice-cold door. When it happens.
Oh, my God.
What?
Annika. Oh, my God.
Jesus, what?
Turn around.
Seriously, you're scaring me.
Turn a round.
And so I do. And that's when I see it. Jared Klein is getting out of his Jeep and walking straight into the Bunza Hut. Straight for the door.
Straight toward us. Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. What do we do? What do we do? Act cool. Act cool. Shelley is quivering behind me, and I'm not so sure-footed myself. Jared sees us looking and gives a little wave, barely a wave, more like a nod from his hand. The door opens.
Hey.
Hey. Shelley watches in silence as Jared keeps his eyes on me. Her fingernails are bearing into my arms like mini knives made of the letter C.
Busy night.
Yeah, I guess everyone's watching the game, so
I guess that makes me lucky a little.
Shelley is basically stabbing my arm now with her fingernails. So, you don't like football?
It's okay.
Shrug. This makes Jared the only guy in Nebraska who doesn't worship at the altar of the pigskin.
What about you?
I don't know. It's fun sometimes, I guess.
Aha. Let me guess. You're a Packers fan.
What? How did you know? I can't help but smile now. I'm busted, but Jared is such a stone-cold fox. Maybe I'm just delirious.
Because it's kind of like old school. They're like an old-school team.
Okay, you got me.
Do I?
He's smiling now. This guy is good. He really knows how to make a girl blush. Shelley elbows me. Not so subtle. Oh, this is my friend, Shelley.
Hi, Shelley.
Hi. Shelley says hi in a really weird way. It's like if you tried to make a deflated balloon speak.
So, can I order some food, or is this just a Halloween decorating operation?
Ha ha, very funny. And with that, we leave Shelley quivering by the door with the skeletons. Now I'm behind the cash register, kind of wishing I came from one of those households where you didn't have to work. Like Jared.
You look cute in your little uniform.
Did he read my mind or something? Yeah? You don't think I look like an Easter egg?
No. I think you look like I should be asking you to marry me.
Crash! That was too much for Shelley. She dropped the skeleton, the box of decorations, and the tape. She looks up, mortified. Jared nods, smiling.
I see this is a dangerous workplace.
Yeah. Okay, so French fries, or maybe...
I'd like a cheese bunza, French fries, a Dr. Pepper.
Oh, you're a pepper.
Yeah, I'm a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper, too?
I can't help but laugh at this guy. He's actually funny. Kind of a surprise. I thought maybe he'd just be some hot lughead jerk. But this? This is unfair.
And a shake.
Really?
Yeah, a shake.
Instead of the Dr. Pepper.
Oh, and you. I'd like a date with you. Saturday night.
Holy, shit. That's not really on the menu or whatever.
I know. That was stupid. I was trying to be clever.
Shelley just so happens to be hanging those decorations closer and closer. He whispers,
I think your friend is spying on us.
Well, obviously. You look like a criminal. He smiles.
Come on. Seriously. You're going out with me. Saturday night.
What? I can't. I've never even been on a date. Like, I don't even know if my parents will let me.
What if I talk to them? What if I ask them? What if I come over and respectfully ask your father?
He's not my father. He's my stepdad.
Respectfully ask your stepdad and your mom for your hand in a date.
Oh, my God. You're crazy. But I'm smiling. Mostly, I can't even believe this is happening. If Becky were here, she would die. I think my friend Becky likes you, actually.
Your friend Becky is a horrible person who probably drinks the blood of small children for breakfast.
Wow, that's fairly accurate. Shelley is peering out from behind a pumpkin. Her eyes are the size of the pumpkin.
Okay, that's it. I'm gonna ask your mom, respectfully, and your stepdad.
Are you serious? Seriously?
I am serious. Seriously.
He walks out, still smiling. Hey, wait, you forgot your... Shelley looks at me from across the bunza hut. She's whispering even though it's just us now.
Annika! Annika!
He forgot his food. Annika, do you know what this means?
That he's coming back?
No, no! It means that... I think maybe... You're the most popular girl in the school now. 28. Shelley's assessment, that I'm now suddenly bumped up to number one popular girl, is wrong. Way off. But it's nice of her to say it. And flattering. Really, what this means is that Becky, when she finds out, is going to come over to my house, chop my limbs off, feed them into my face, and then chop my head off. I know this the way I know the sky is blue, leaves are green, and sports are boring. I am attempting to study in my room, which is difficult when you feel dismemberment is in your immediate future. My mom, in her Mrs. Santa Claus mode, is bringing in milk and cookies. I know exactly what she's going to say. Honey, now don't stay up too late. I say it with her. She's right. I just have a habit of procrastinating my homework until the absolute last, latest, worst time to possibly do anything. Have you heard from Tiffany, honey? What? No. Her shift isn't till Wednesday. Oh, well, I hope everything's okay. Me too, Mom. She stands there a second. Oh, I almost forgot. Someone left something for you. Wait, hold on. She scurries out, and now I'm really curious. No one's ever left anything for me here before. I don't think anyone even knows exactly where I live. Here, it looks like a present, I guess. It's a tiny box. Black velvet, wrapped in a little white bow. My heart gives a thump. Well, aren't you going to open it? I don't know, Mom. Is this from you? No, no, honey, I swear, someone just left it. The boys found it, actually, on the front step. That's so weird. Okay, here goes. I untie the white bow and lift the little lid. Wow. It's a little gold necklace with my name engraved on it in cursive. Annika, in flowing letters. Wow, how cool. Wow, you ain't kidding. Here, I'll put it on you. My mom comes around and clasps it. Now we both look. So, do you know who it's from? What? Wasn't there a card or something? Nope, it's a mystery. My mom and I both look in the mirror at the necklace. It's fancy. It's expensive. Okay, now, try to go to bed, will ya? Otherwise, I don't feel like I'm doing my job. Oh, Mom, did anybody ever tell you that you're basically like a muffin that got turned into a person? Mom smiles and walks to the door. Oh, that imagination of yours. Night, Mom. Night, honey. 29. The first person to spot the necklace at school is Becky. Of course. Nice. Where'd you get it? Oh, my mom. She thought, huh, that's nice. Is it your birthday or something? No, it's just... She said she saw it and she thought of me. She saw a necklace that said Annika. What, like at the Annika store? No, I mean she saw like these name necklaces and she thought of me. Oh, whatever. Shelley is standing next to me. She knows I'm lying. She can feel it. That's awesome. I wish my mom would do something like that. Shelley, the only necklace your mom is going to get you is a dying Jesus. Becky, as usual, speaks the truth. My turn. It's okay, Shelley. I'll buy you a dying Jesus. Shelley smiles at me. She knows I'm with her. That we're in it together. Jeez, why don't you guys get a room? It drives Becky crazy that Shelley and I are close. She wants to divide and conquer any way she can. She's deranged. The bell rings and everyone starts taking off in different directions like crazy and, of course, I run into Logan. Did you get the necklace? What? I glance around and confirm that no one is making note of this encounter. Did you get the necklace? I left you a necklace. At your house. Oh! Yeah, see, here it is. I'm wearing it. I don't know why I feel surprised. I guess I wasn't sure it was from Logan. He looks at me with puppy eyes, and I feel like the world's biggest jerk. But I don't know why. That was really nice of you. Thank you. Thank you so much. He smiles. Second bell. Gotta go. He takes off around the corner, and I am left there, standing, late for physics, realizing that I'm the dumbest person on earth because for some insane reason I thought, now don't laugh when you hear this, I thought the necklace was from Jared. 30. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm confused. On the one side, there's Logan, who, even if he's a social pariah, is really cool and smart and thinks like nobody else I've ever met before. Then, on the other hand, there's Jared Klein, rock star, super king, and the one person in the world who can protect me from Becky Vilhauer. I mean, it's like trying to decide between James Dean and Elvis. Seriously, who could make that choice? My guilt has led me squarely to the dinner table at Logan's house. If you were wondering how close Becky lives to Logan McDonough, the answer is right across the street. I know, doomsday scenario. The only good thing is, her house is back like a football field from the street because they needed room to put trees, a wall, a fountain, and other stuff to make everybody else feel like shit. So even though Becky is almost spitting distance from our little friendly dinner, I'm actually not that scared. And by not that scared, I mean, I only checked 3 times since I've been here to make sure no one has seen me. Besides, there are other things to be scared of, like Logan's family. First, there's his mom, who, as far as I can tell, has her cocktail superglued to her fingers. She's a pretty blonde with a huge diamond ring and all, but there's something sad about her. Something resigned. It's like the weight of that huge, shiny rock is pinning her to the ground. Then there are his 2 kid brothers, Billy and Lars, who are 3 and 6, respectively. You could cast them in a commercial about cereal. That's how much they look like dumplings. Billy especially. A little towhead with sky blue eyes. Then there's Logan and me. And finally, the pièce de résistance. Logan's dad. Logan's dad looks like the kind of guy you are trying to avoid. All smiles and sweaters, terrifyingly cheerful, and talking, lots of talking. I mean, the guy never shuts up. So far this dinner, which he had catered, by the way, I'm not kidding. He ordered out and even had them send over a guy in a white chef's coat to serve us. He must have done this before, because the guy in the white chef's coat knows 2 things. 1, where the serving plates are, and 2, to keep the wife's drink filled. I mean, this dinner here on a Tuesday night, just a regular old Tuesday night, no holidays or anything, must have cost a fortune. Like my mom's entire grocery budget for the whole month. Apparently, this is natural behavior for him. During his monologue about how he's planning on triumphing over the zoning restrictions on his new subdivision, Logan leans in. He likes to show off. Now, Logan's dad doesn't like interruptions.
What's that, son? You want to share with the table?
I was just telling Annika what a master you are with real estate.
Oh, so like I said, we're still waiting on the zone permits. Should be any time now, goddamn city.
And now Logan's mom actually chimes in. Not in front of the boys, please. There's a silence here. And now Dad.
You're right. I should spell it out. These F-U-C-K-I-N-G city permits are an F-U-C-K-I-N-G waste of time.
He slams his drink on the table, and, as if on a teeter-totter, as his hand goes down, Logan's mom gets up. She gently wrangles the 2 little boys, kissing Billy on the head as he wraps around her like a koala. Lars stays close too, clinging to her leg. She even puts her drink down. Miracle! As she scurries the boys upstairs. Logan looks up at his mom, and you can see now who he loves most in the world, and he wants to save her from this thing at the other end of the table. You can see that too. Dad will not be bested. He continues on and on until the end of dinner, even through dessert. Zones, permits, the goddamn bureaucracy, all of it conspiring to ruin his life and paperwork. By the time he leads us down to his man cave in the basement, he's had about 6 scotches. The caterers are cleaning up now, Logan's mom has retired to her room, the TV muffled up the stairs, and his two kid brothers, Lars and Billy, waiting upstairs for Logan to tuck them in, which I guess he does each night. Which, honestly, massive points for Logan. Downstairs, the man of the house sure is proud of his gun cupboard, or whatever you call it. Display case, I guess. My mom would freak her eyeballs out if she even saw me in this room. No joke. Meanwhile, Logan's dad is pointing at each of his prized possessions, a litany of names that all sound vaguely menacing, conquering, and are all, obviously, invented deep in the recesses of the gun manufacturer's boardrooms, where a panel of guys probably sits around throwing out names that will make guys feel like they have bigger penises. Logan is totally embarrassed by his dad, who boasts about each and every gun, its name, and what type of animal he killed with it. Oh, I didn't mention the insane amount of deer, geese, and wild boar trophies he has displayed in his man cave. Let me tell you, I started counting 5 minutes ago and lost track. That's how many. Right now he's showing me a gun that I think I saw in that movie Rambo.
See, this one here's a beaut. Bushmaster AR-15 semi-automatic rifle.
You want to hold it?
Dad,
I'm asking your friend, thank you.
No, sir. No thanks.
Your loss. Want to see something else?
He is about to pull another gun out of the cabinet when Logan starts again. Okay, Dad, we really gotta. And it happens so fast. It happens before I even knew it could happen, and before I can believe it. Logan's dad backhands him on the cheek so hard, it leaves a welt. Silence. Upstairs, the caterers clink and clank the silverware, but down here, there is only silence. Logan's dad looks at him, that drunk-eyed look of a dare. Dare you to fight back, son?
Wanna fight back?
He breathes hard.
I said I was addressing your friend.
There's nothing to say. I mean, there's a million things to say, but I can't say one of them. Logan looks up, his hand on his cheek, the welt from his jaw to his ear. Thanks, Dad. You always knew how to leave a good impression. Logan heads upstairs, and I don't blame him. Now it's just me and Rambo over here.
Excuse my son, Annika. His mother wasn't successful in teaching him manners. But I bet you understand why a man would be proud of this kind of collection.
He steamrolls on.
Just look at it. Do you know how much care and expense is contained in this case?
I nod then. I'm sorry, Mr. McDonough, but I need to be home in time for curfew. And with that he smiles, picks up that ridiculous cartoon gun, and I do believe that's my exit. Yes, this is definitely my exit. I make my way up the stairs with the world's most uncomfortable smile. No fast moves. At the top of the stairs, I look back at good old Dad. He's sitting there on his stool with his scotch and his Bushmaster. P.S. Nice name, Bushmaster. I guess that gun makes him Master of the Bush. He is smiling to himself, a dull smile unfocused. His eyes glazed over. It almost seems like he's talking to himself, but nothing's coming out. Whatever it is, I'll bet you a shiny nickel it is some sort of paranoid rant about the government, freedom, our forefathers, and how someday he's gonna save the world. So, I guess Logan has me beat on the bad dad front. He's at the top of the stairs waiting for me. Sorry, Annika. What? You're sorry? No, I am fucking... I don't even know what to... Yeah, kind of like a car crash. We make our way up to the second floor. There's two sets of stairs up here, one for the servants, I guess, and one for the people who are supposed to be important. I wait there on the servants' steps while Logan goes to tuck Billy and Lars into bed for the night. I'm terrified his dad is going to come lumbering up the important people stairs with that stupid small penis gun. Luckily, these steps offer a kind of shelter. I mean, Not much, but at least it's something. His mom is hiding, too. Her door is closed, the blue light of the TV coming out under it. I can see why she keeps that cocktail full. Let me tell you, I probably would, too, married to that freak. If I peek in, I can see Logan turning on their little nightlight, a mini Yoda that matches the Star Wars sheets and Billy's R2-D2 socks. Billy doesn't want to give back his dinosaur, but Logan explains it has to protect him from the foot of the bed. Billy sees the logic in this and relents. See? Your dinosaur will protect you. Rawr. It's an ankylosaurus. Oh, okay. Your ankylosaurus will protect you. Can I have my T-Rex, too? Yes, of course. You need your T-Rex and your ankylosaurus. They're in cahoots. That's one smart 3-year-old, I've got to say. I'm not sure I could have said ankylosaurus, let alone recognized one at that age. They're such cute little boys. Billy with his towhead and Lars in his Spider-Man footy sleeper. Their room is full of everything little boys love. Trains, dinosaurs, trucks, the Millennium Falcon and the Death Star poised for battle on the shelf. Looking at Logan in there, tucking them in and giving them each a peck on the forehead, I can't help but think that I'm an idiot, and that he may be, quite possibly, the greatest guy in the world. 31. By the time I get to work on Wednesday, it's total drama. I walk in and Shelley nods her head in the direction of the back, giving me the universal look for, the shit has hit the fan. I go through to find Tiffany in the back with the manager and two cops. Cops? What the...
Annika, not now. We have a situation.
Tiffany can barely glance up at me. She looks stricken. You can tell she's been crying. What's going on? What is this?
Well, if you must know, Tiffany has been stealing.
It hits me like a sledgehammer. Oh, no. All this time I've been stealing their faces off, and now they think it's Tiffany. Because she's black. It's that simple. No, she hasn't.
Mr. Baum scoffs. Annika, I think I know when the drops are short.
Tiffany, on the gray plastic seat in the corner, looks like she's in pain. God, this is excruciating. I'm gonna have to come clean. I'm gonna have to turn myself in. I'm gonna have to ruin my college transcripts. Christ, the Count is going to draw and quarter me. Then he's going to feed my body to the vultures. Then he is going to draw and quarter the vultures. No, listen, it wasn't her, I swear.
Annika!
Shh. And then he plays the tape. The ongoing video they have on the cash register. And the cops see it. And Tiffany sees it. And I see it. There on the video is Tiffany, indeed, stealing out of the cash register. No plan. No system. Nothing. Just plain stealing. I can't believe it. I can't believe my eyes. Tiffany looks up at me, her cheeks on fire. I can tell she's totally ashamed. She mouths the words, I'm sorry. I mouth back, it's okay. And I want to tell her we've been stealing their pants off for the past 6 weeks, and that's why they even thought to look at the tapes. So it's my fault. Which it is, by the way. This is all my fault.
Sir, do you wish to press charges? Damn straight.
What an asshole. I have to do something. No, wait. I made her do it.
Excuse me?
Yeah, I put her up to it. It was stupid, and I was to blame.
Listen, Annika, that's nice of you, but...
Mr. Baum, I told her to do it. I told her if she didn't, I'd get her fired. It was stupid and immature, and I don't even know what I was thinking, but she didn't want to do it, I swear. She begged me. Mr. Baum looks at me, still unconvinced.
That's not like you, Annika.
I know, I told her it was like an initiation. I was being a jerk. I don't know what I was thinking.
Is this true, Tiffany?
Tiffany looks at me for permission. I nod as slight as can be. Yes, sir.
Annika made you?
Yes, sir.
Why didn't you tell us?
I didn't want to get her in trouble.
Well, she sure as shit got you in trouble.
Tiffany nods. The cops whisper something to Mr. Baum. I can see Tiffany behind them. We make eye contact. She mouths again. Thank you. I wink. But that doesn't mean I'm not busted. I'm in trouble now, and my mom is gonna kill me. I'll probably be fired. Oh well, it's not like my dream is to be the ruler of the Bunza Hut.
Tiffany, you're fired.
What? I yelp. But she didn't do anything.
Annika, stay out of this. You've done enough, don't you think? Please, Tiffany, get your things and call your mom. It's time to go. That's it.
Mr. Baum, please.
And you. We're gonna have a talk. Come with me.
Ugh. Why did I come to work today? Why did I even take this stupid job? And even worse, why did I steal? I mean, what was I thinking? Of course Mr. Baum would press charges if he knew. He's a mean little man, taking it out on the world. Now he's dragged me into the storage room. It's just the two of us and the Bunza Hut inventory.
Annika, I know you're lying.
What?
I know you're lying to cover for that girl.
No, I'm not.
It's okay. You're a good person.
You're not firing me?
What? No, you're our best worker.
I gulp. God, talk about totally unfair. If only he knew.
I'd like to give you a raise.
I really should stop poisoning him with Valium. It is clearly affecting the decision-making areas of his brain. Mr. Baum, you don't...
Just stop it. Christmas is coming. Maybe you could buy something.
Do you really have to fire her?
Yes, Annika, I do. These people need to know.
These people?
You know.
Mr. Baum? Just because she's...
Annika, sometimes stereotypes exist for a reason.
He pauses.
Look, you're young. You don't know anything yet. Someday you'll get it. Now get back to work. Shelley's probably crashed the register by now.
I don't know what to say to any of this. All I know is I'm the worst person on Earth. Worse than the lowest amoeba on the lowest worm to crawl around the lowest swamp on Earth. I get back to the register, and Shelley sidles up to me, close enough to whisper. What happened? They fired Tiffany. Shelley's saucer eyes turn to plates. For what? Stealing. Shelley looks at me. She knows we're to blame. She doesn't know what to think. I can see the gears officially grind to a stop in her head. They caught her on tape. What? They did? Yep. I saw it. So it wasn't? No, it wasn't. Phew. I feel better. Well, I don't, because they probably wouldn't have noticed if it wasn't for us. Oh. I think our stealing careers are over, Shelley. Through the Halloween decorations, out the glass doors, I can see Tiffany's mom drive up fast and slam on the brakes. Not happy. Tiffany gets in, and it's all I can do not to run out there and pull her out and tell her just to go to my house, go to my mom, join our family. It's not her fault. None of this is her fault. It's my fault. All of it. And I know it. 32. It's 22 degrees out, and Mom's driving me home after my shift. It's dark already, and outside you can see your breath. Mom, do you believe in Jesus? What, honey? Do you believe in Jesus? Like, he was the son of God, and he did all those magic tricks, and then flew up to heaven in the 3 days or whatever? I don't know, honey. Jury's out. We drive on in sacrilege. But one thing is for sure, Annika. What goes around, comes around. Uh-oh. That is not a message I am trying to hear. How was work, honey? Oh, you know. Slow shift? Mom, they fired Tiffany. What? Why? For stealing. We're almost home, and none too soon. I hate the cold. Even inside the car, your feet are freezing. Your toes like mini icicles. But how do they... They had it on video. Oh, that's awful. Just awful. I know,
Mr. Baum obviously thinks it's 'cause she's black. Hmm. Mom, it's not 'cause she's black. It's 'cause she's poor. I'd steal too if I was in her shoes.
No, you wouldn't.
Mom, a lot of people steal. A lot. People who aren't even poor.
Now we're stopped in the driveway.
Like who?
I don't know. Just people.
Well, what people?
Forget it.
Like you?
What? No.
Listen, I'm not saying you are, or you have. I'm not saying that. But if you are, or you have, you better stop immediately, and I mean it. Hypothetically.
Mom?
You want someone to press charges? You want to ruin your college transcripts? You want to be stuck here for the rest of your life?
No.
Okay. Well then, don't even think about it. I mean it.
Okay, honey?
That's not you.
Okay?
That's not how I raised you.
But she's wrong. Even though she did everything a mom could do to make me peach pie, inside, I'm still spider stew.
I'll always be spider stew. I'll spend the rest of my life pretending I'm not, and that I'm candy corn and candy cane and candy apple, but inside?
Inside?
Well, you might as well just dip a tarantula in chocolate and call it a day.
33.
The perfect thing about a Wednesday night is no one thinks you're going anywhere. It's like the march of the week. Nothing doing. Logan is waiting outside on the corner, and I am doing my hot acrobatic sneak-out moves to get out this window and down this tree before my sisters hear me and blow the whistle. Boy, they would love that. You might as well draw a heart around Logan, standing there in the moonlight, with his moped and vaguely surly brow. By the time he hands me his helmet, I have completely forgotten about Tiffany and the money and the fact that I'm obviously going to jail. Flying down our ticky-tacky street to Holmes Lake, there's not a soul around for miles. Nobody's supposed to be at Holmes Lake at 1 in the morning. This is a family town, see? These paddle boats and bike paths are strictly meant for people in sunscreen. We have to sneak into a hole in the fence, about 0.5 mile from the boathouse. This park is all about the lake, and the park is about 3 miles wide. This is like a big city attraction, and even though it's right by our house, we never seem to get here as a family. I think because there's no TV. Tiptoeing through in the dark, to the boathouse, it feels like we could potentially run into a serial killer, a brigade of the undead, or maybe just a run-of-the-mill axe murderer. Logan is holding my hand, the moped left behind. He's got a backpack on, so I am guessing he has some sort of plan here. You can see the stars reflecting off the lake, still as ice and probably just as cold. It's pitch black out here, and I'm betting, on occasion, more than one person has walked right into the lake. The boathouse is a one-story wooden box, basically, locked, but that doesn't seem to be stopping Logan from jimmying the lock with a pin. Are you a CIA agent?
Yes. This is the first thing they teach us in spy school.
He gets the lock on the third try, and next thing I know, he's in the little boathouse.
Stay out here, just for a second.
Okay, that's annoying, because I'm starting to freeze my mittens off. The sound of the rowboats clacking into the dock is only about the second spookiest sound on Earth. The dock goes out about 50 feet into the lake. All along it, the little rowboats are tethered, like leaves on a tree.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
Okay. Ta-da!
I look in, and it's not exactly the Ritz or whatever, but I gotta hand it to Logan. He gets an A for effort. There's about 5 lanterns around the room, you know? The kind you always see weather-faced lighthouse keepers holding in paintings, with oil and whatever else is involved in making a continuous fire that doesn't burn your ears off. There's a little table in the middle of the room, with a lantern in the middle, and some kind of picnic. Grapes, cheese, beer. You may think this seems like just some low-rent scam, but Logan seems pretty proud of it, and if you saw the look in his eyes, you would want to run off with him by dawn, even to Oklahoma.
Wow. I don't know what to say.
Why say anything? You don't have to.
Okay.
He pulls out a wooden chair for me, and I sit, suddenly feeling embarrassed or worried, or like something is going to go wrong, and he's going to realize I'm not worth all of this after all.
What's wrong?
I don't know. I guess I just want you to like me.
I do like you. Why do you think I did all this?
I know, but it's like, I want you to stay liking me, you know?
So you're, like, worried about something that's not happening?
Yeah, kinda. The boats outside sway into the dock, creaking.
You know, Annika, you could waste your whole life worrying. You know that?
What do you mean?
Well, what if you look back one day and you're like, fuck, all I did was worry for the past 80 years.
I guess.
Look, you don't have to get an A+ right now, or be cool or anything. You just have to be here with me.
I sort of don't know what to say to this, except that it is perfect. And I'm looking at him, and it's like he's the hero, but a dark kind of hero, and I'm the ingenue. And any second now, he's going to sweep me off my feet, and the movie music is going to swell, and the end is going to get spelled out in cursive on the screen before the credits roll. He leans in, and we are just about to kiss, and there are just about to be fireworks, and the orchestra is just about to play. Except, there's a noise outside. Creaks on the dock, not the sound of the rowboats tethered. The sound of footsteps. So now the movie music stops, and the projector runs out, and the screen goes white, and the theater lights go up, and the audience grumbles. Cheated. Those footsteps are heavy, and getting closer.
Hey, who's that in there? Get out of there. Come on out.
This is not a nice voice, and not a city voice either. This is the voice of someone who comes from a shack somewhere out in the sticks. Logan motions me to be quiet. Standing at the door.
Can I help you?
Yes, you can help me. I'm the goddamn security, and you can help the goddamn security by getting the hell out of there.
You got a deal, sir. Just leave me be, and I'll go on home. I promise.
I said get, and I meant it.
I mean it too, sir. Just give me 2 seconds.
But the door's open, and there he is. The guy's got a red face, red hair, and freckles. He might as well be a representative for the color red. He's got a parka on, work boots, and I can smell him all the way from the table. Whiskey. I guess I don't blame him. What else is he supposed to do wandering around Holmes Lake each night, with no one to talk to but the lampposts? He's also representing hair growing in weird places, like out of his ears and his nose. I'm surprised he doesn't have hair growing out of